This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thanks for spending some time with me today. The 2019 Women's World Cup kicks off tomorrow in France, and once again, Team USA enters the competition as the squad to beat, helmed by veterans Carly Lloyd, Alex Morgan, and Megan Rapinoe. And coming off a 2015 win, the women's national team has looked nearly unstoppable. But even a squad as successful as the U.S. women's national team faces problems of equity. Just before the tournament began, all 28 members of the team filed a class action lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation, citing gender discrimination. With the results of both the World Cup and the lawsuit currently pending, we turn to soccer journalist Caitlin Murray to guide us through the next month of drama on and off the field. Caitlin is the author of the new book, The National Team, The Inside Story of the Women Who Changed Soccer. And Caitlin joined us by phone. Thanks for being with us for all of it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Caitlin, why is the U.S. a favorite to win?
Well, they're the number one ranked team in the world, and they have probably the best attacking group in the world. I mean, what I would tell your listeners who are going to tune into the World Cup, look for the Americans to score a lot of goals. They are a super attacking team. They play a very attacking style, and they're going to try to catch teams off guard and get the lead early, and that's usually how they beat teams.
So, Caitlin, what is a team that's currently considered an underdog that you think could actually make some noise?
Well, I think when we talk about the World Cup and predictions and, you know, who's going to win, the United States is the favorite. France, the host country, is also the favorite. A team that has been given sort of long odds is Australia, and I think they are a team that can absolutely reach the final. They have what I think is the best player in the world right now, Samantha Kerr. It seems like every time she gets in front of goal, she's scoring. They have a young, really fast, exciting team to watch. So I would keep an eye on Australia.
It's interesting you mentioned Sam Kerr, because I asked the producer to pull a little bit of the Nike ad with her, because I just love the first 30 seconds of it. Let's play it for our listeners.
When I was a kid growing up playing AFL or footy, it took 3 years for the boys to figure out I was actually a girl. and I remember one of the boys, when he finally found out, he started crying.
What makes Sam Kerr, what's her superpower, Caitlin?
I think it's just the sort of scoring instinct she has. You know, we talk about players having a nose for goal, and it seems like she always knows exactly what to do. And the great thing about her is she can score in a variety of ways. You know, certain players have their specialty, whether it's free kicks or they're great headers of the ball. She can score in just about any way possible. And I think that she could be a contender to win the golden boot of the tournament, meaning the player that scores the most goals. So I would definitely keep an eye on her.
My guest is Caitlin Murray. She wrote a book called The National Team, The Inside Story of the Women Who Changed Soccer. Scotland qualified. It's its first World Cup, and they faced England. It's very dramatic. Why do you think this team was propelled from obscurity to the World Cup?
Well, I think we've seen a lot of investment in women's soccer, or women's football, as they would call it overseas. And that has helped some teams emerge on the world stage that weren't always sort of in contention. I mean, the exciting thing about this World Cup is I think we've really moved away from the idea that there are maybe five teams that can win it, or maybe even less, going back further. Now I think there's just a lot more teams that are competitive. We see that with Scotland. I think Spain is another team where they've had a lot of success on the men's side, and we're finally starting to see the women's side is getting better, and they could actually, you know, take a leap forward in this World Cup. So this is going to be the most competitive World Cup on the women's side there has ever been, and there's more depth within the field than there's ever been.
Who are some of the other first-timers?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. gosh, I don't have that in front of me.
Sorry, I mean to throw a curveball.
There are a lot because,
there are a lot, though,
there
right?
A lot because they've expanded. Yeah, they've expanded the field so that allows more teams to get in. And, I mean, there are some growing pains. We saw in 2015, I'm trying to remember, I think it was maybe Thailand, who is back this time, got beat by Germany by, like, 10-0 or something at the group stage. So there are some growing pains, but what you see is that these teams come back and they're better. And expanding the field of the Women's World Cup kind of helps improve the quality of play. This gives teams something that they feel they can compete for, and they're incentivized to improve.
I do want to talk about the gender equity issue, because right before the World Cup began, all 28 members of the USA squad announced they'd filed a class action gender discrimination lawsuit against their employer, the U.S. Soccer Federation, and they're arguing that they receive lower wages, not great working conditions, and a whole lot less support than their counterpart on the men's team, which is a much less successful soccer team. So what do the women on Team USA really want?
Yeah, so there are kind of two pieces of this lawsuit. The easiest part to understand is the non-compensation issues. So that's things like the women having to play a lot of their games on artificial turf, which players say is harsher on their bodies, compared to the men's team, which essentially always played on natural grass. The men being flown to their games on charter flights, whereas the women have had to fly in commercial flights. The other part of it that is maybe a little more complicated to understand is the compensation piece, where the women say they aren't compensated as well as the men's team. Each team negotiates for their compensation in collective bargaining negotiations, and they agree to the way they are paid. But what the women are alleging in this lawsuit is that more compensation overall has been made available to the men's team. And when the women negotiated for their contract, U.S. Soccer was not willing to budge and give them anything close to equal or equitable. That more money is being made available to the men's team, and there's not a justification for it.
How do you think this fight for equity, what influence do you think it could have on the team's experience at the tournament?
Yeah, I think that's the big question, because if the U.S. doesn't do well, I think a lot of people are going to talk about them being distracted and not focusing enough on playing soccer. I mean, one thing I would say is when I wrote my book, The National Team, I actually didn't realize how much these sorts of fights with U.S. soccer had been happening over the years. I think that these sorts of fights, it's kind of part of the team's DNA, its history. They've been doing this. It's just, it hasn't always been as public and as visible as this. So they've been able to manage that in the past. There are a lot of examples of this team having to have, you know, side jobs as, you know, lawyers or marketers or, you know, doing all these different things while still playing soccer.
I noticed that Norway's strongest player, I believe her name is Ada Hegerberg, she chose not to play because of gender equity issues. Just generally, what's been the response to women speaking up, it seems globally, taking a stand?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we have seen is that the more players do this, the more progress is made. I mean, when the U.S. women's national team was playing in the 90s, you know, something else I talk about in my book, they were getting $10 a day. They were making no money. They sacrificed a lot, and they had to keep pushing to get to where they are now. And what we're seeing is a lot of national teams around the world are sort of at the point maybe the U.S. was in the 90s, and other teams are standing up and fighting for themselves, and we are seeing progress. And the U.S. women's national team has sort of been kind of the leaders, the role models in helping these teams wage these fights. The Ada Hegerberg example is interesting because after she quit playing for the national team, Norway's federation actually set equal pay for the men's and the women's teams, and she still hasn't returned. She says there's still other issues that she has a problem with. She hasn't really been super detailed, so we don't know exactly what the issue is, if it's no longer compensation. But it's interesting because I know Norway would love to have her. She is the best player in the world. And unfortunately, we are not going to get to see her in this World Cup.
My guest is Caitlin Murray. She's written a book called The National Team, The Inside Story of Women Who Changed Soccer. We're talking about the Women's World Cup, which kicks off tomorrow. Okay, I'm going to wave the flag a little bit and just talk about Team USA.
Okay.
Team USA has three captains. That's correct, right?
Yeah, so it's a rotating cast of captains, I would say.
Okay.
Depending on who's on the field.
All right, Carly Lloyd, Alex Morgan, Megan Rapinoe. What leadership skill does each person bring, do you think? What does Carly bring?
Oh, man. Well, they are very different types of leaders. I mean, Carly Lloyd, well, first of all, I think probably your listeners remember in 2015, Carly Lloyd scored a hat trick in the final. She was the hero of the tournament. She's not going to be a starter this time. She's going to be coming off the bench as a substitute. She's not pleased about it. She has been very vocal about that. And she's the sort of leader that she wants to lead by example. She leads by working as hard as she possibly can and expecting the same out of her teammates. I think Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe are a little more outspoken and vocal and sort of, you know, pumping the players up, that sort of leadership. But yeah, I mean, this U.S. team has a lot of veteran experience. I think they're actually average age, the oldest team at this World Cup, but they were the oldest team in 2015, so maybe that's the right strategy.
What about their coach, Jill Ellis?
Yeah, she has, like any coach, I think there are a lot of armchair coaches who think they can coach better than her. You know, when she put together this roster, kind of talking about, you know, the average age and, you know, the players that are on the team, there were some surprising decisions. There were some positions where I think the U.S. doesn't have a lot of depth, and there was depth available, and Jill Ellis opted not to do that. She has a very specific sort of way that she looks at how she wants the U.S. team to play. She wants them to be ultra-attacking, and so this roster has less defenders than it does attacking players. That's really her focus. And I think Jill Ellis has been trying to sort of evolve the team's style to be even more attacking than they were in 2015. So it's a big bet. We'll see, you know, how it works in France.
And I'm going to circle right back from my last question to the first question, because you mentioned that USA and France seem to be the favorites here. So if they end up squaring off, what's the best tactic for the U.S. to beat that specific team, the French team?
Oh, gosh. Well, the problem with France is that they have talent all over all over the field. I think France actually beat the U.S. in January, the last time they faced off against each other. Personally, I think that the U.S. can get beat on the wings because France has fast, really talented wingers. I think they need to be maybe a little more conservative in their approach. I do not expect to see that. That is not how the U.S. plays. They are going to just try to attack like a battering ram and sort of just go at France. I am worried about the U.S. exposing themselves on the counterattack to a team like France. France can absolutely beat them in that situation. So I don't think they'll do it, but I would think they should be a little more conservative against a team as talented as France.
Well, this is to be continued. My guest has been Caitlin Murray. Her new book is called The National Team, The Inside Story of the Women Who Changed Soccer. Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us on All of It.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Coming up next, we're rebroadcasting some of your favorite and our favorite interviews this year's with Tony Award nominees. You get to check out our conversation with playwright and composer Anais Mitchell, director Rachel Chavkin, and actor Andre DeShields about their musical Hadestown, which received 14 Tony nominations. More after the break.